Well, explain what CEO is, maybe.
So CEO stands for Corporate Europe Observatory, and we are lobby watchdog. So we look at the influence of lobbies on European politics.
Okay, and so you had on your website a post from last week, TTIP, a corporate lobbying paradise. Why is TTIP or turning Europe into a corporate lobbying paradise?
What we did is we asked the Department of Trade of the European Commission all the meetings that they had with lobbyists. And we had the list of meetings of the Commission between January 2012 and February 2014. And in all the meetings that we identified and analyzed, we realized 88% of the meetings that the DG Trade, so the negotiators of TTIP, 88% of the people that the negotiators met were corporate lobbyists. And this is why we believe it's a corporate lobbying paradise, because there was only 9% of the meetings that were with public interest groups, so consumer groups or trade unions.
So you did get the information by just asking them?
Yeah, there's a transparency directive in the European Union that gives you the right to ask the Commission for information about their meetings. So we did ask for a list of all the meetings of the Department of Trade.
Yeah, you say that it's more than just inviting the large companies primarily. It's also keeping trade unions and other public interest groups, NGOs, at bay. So keeping them away. How does that work?
Well, for instance, first is because of the numbers. So there have been only 9% of the meetings with consumer groups and trade unions.
But you're insinuating that it's actively being reduced, right?
Yeah, because what we found out is we also asked the Commission for the emails that they've exchanged with lobbyists. And what we saw is when there was a lobbying, for instance, the one on pesticides, ECPA, when the pesticide lobby group ECPA, the Commission actually went to the lobby group and asked them for the contributions. And when they send a contribution, they ask for a meeting to discuss this contribution. And this has never been done with the trade unions. The Commission never proactively went to the trade unions for TTIP. And when the trade union sent their position, there was no follow-up meeting after that.
Actually, I forgot to start off with saying what TTIP is. Of course, that's the trade deal that they're working on, right? And the negotiations started in 2013. And when are they expected to be completed?
Well, the Commission expects to complete them by next year. But they're not going very well, apparently. So it
yes.
might take longer.
So there's some public outcry. And also, you mentioned in one of the posts on your website that it's undermining consumer protection, for example, driving down existing standards. Why is that?
Well, first, because you will have the right for a private investor to sue a state if there's a legislation they don't like. We have a case, for instance, in Germany that's been sued by a Swedish company because Germany decided to phase out nuclear power. Also, what you have is you have regulatory cooperation in TTIP, and what it means is that, for instance, U.S. cosmetics, they will be sold in the European Union because we will recognize their laws in the United States as equivalent as all laws. So, for instance, in terms of cosmetics, to take this example again, in the USA, there's only 11 chemicals that are prohibited in cosmetics. In the European Union, we have more than 1,000 chemicals. And lately, there was an interview with the director of the European Commission in Spain, and he admitted that we will have U.S. cosmetics with chemicals that are banned in the EU, but we will still have them in the supermarkets. So we could end up having things like lead in lipsticks that are forbidden in the European Union, but we could end up having them on the supermarket shelves again.
How would that work? Because we have this legislation which bans these 1,000 additional chemicals. Would that just be overruled, or would the law be removed?
When we talk about mutual recognition, what it means is that we see each other's laws are equivalent. So a U.S. company will produce according to U.S. laws and then will export to the European Union and the United States the same way.
I understand the principle, but if at the same time you have a law saying that these specific chemicals that are allowed under U.S. legislation are banned under EU legislation, there's a conflict there, right?
Yeah, there is, and that's why we believe that this is going to undermine standards. And this will apply to all to finance also, for instance. You will have European banks that will operate in Wall Street under European laws, and European laws are actually less stringent than the ones that you have in the United States.
Okay, so there's the other way around, that we, in the US standards, will be reduced to the European level.
As well, yeah.
Yeah. Now, the vast majority of the people that the authorities are talking to, the European authorities are talking to, are corporate. But isn't that logic in a way? Because when we talk about legislation, about pharmaceuticals, and about, not legislation, but about having similar standards, isn't it logic to have the authorities talk to the pharmaceutical industry, because they are the ones who are primarily affected?
Yeah, obviously. And that's of course, but you can talk with lobbyists, of course, but you would need a balanced dialogue. You would need to have to listen to the other points of view as well, and this is not what you have at the moment, because it seems that one point of view is overrepresented over the other. And also, you do have, I mean, especially in trade, the mandate of the commissioner, it's to improve trade of the European companies, but you still need to think about other priorities like public interest, you have public health, you need financial safety, and this is not really the concerns of DG Trade at the moment. And what we've seen, for instance, is there was a position on finance that was leaked, so the public had received the position, and the CTUK, which is one of the biggest financial lobby in Brussels, mm-hmm. they say that the position was so close to their position that a bystander would believe it would come from their brochure. So we really have some copy-pasting from lobbyists to the Commission, and this is something that we denounce, because we would expect the Commission to listen to both points of view and find their own compromise between both positions, and not just copy-paste the position of the big corporate lobbyists.
Mm-hmm. That brings us to one of the potential explanations why this happens, which is another point, is greasing the wheels of the TTIP lobby, revolving door, de schuifdeur, draaideur in Dutch. Explain what's going on there.
Well, you have a lot of people that work in the institutions. They then go to work to the private companies, and when they do this, they take a lot of information and contacts. And also, when they leave and go to big lobbyists, they're in the lobbying. They give more influence to the lobbyists, obviously.
But there are some. Rules there, right? This isn't that I saw it, that there's a there are revolving door rules, you mentioned in your article yourself. So what are the rules?
Well, the rules is you have, for the commissioners, you need 6 months before you can take up a position in a private business, and you're supposed not to lobby on the issue that you were working on before.
So 6 months, so you can be involved in trade talks about banking regulations and then resign, and 6 months later take a position as a banker.
You can.
Okay.
But you can also have 2 or 3 jobs. For instance, in the parliament, you have members of the European Parliament that have a second, a third, and a fourth jobs. And this is not illegal.
Do you have the CEO has a vision on what would be a good regulation? I mean, are you just criticizing what is happening now, or would you propose something concrete, something better? What do you think is acceptable? Because, of course, you can argue, the argument is, okay, these people have all this experience, and it's a pity to let it go to waste.
Yeah, of course, but this experience is also, it was in the public interest, and then they go to the private interest, so they really change interest. Well, we work with a coalition of 100 NGOs, and we've been asking a lot of reforms, especially on revolving doors, to have so sanctions in case the code of conduct is not respected, and to have more resources devoted to actually looking at this revolving doors, to be able to make sure that there's people in the commission and in the parliament that have the resources and the time to be able to have a look if there is any problems with this. But also, there's a lobby register in the European Union where lobbyists are supposed to register and say who they work for, and this is not compulsory, and this is one of our biggest demands, is to make it compulsory so that every lobbyist who actually lobbies the institution will have to be registered.
Mm-hmm. Is anything moving there on that on these demands that you have, or is it just being ignored for the time being?
For the register, there's a small step that has been done, because now if you meet a commissioner or if you need a head of cabinet, you have to be registered. Mm-hmm. Now there's a ban on meeting with unregistered lobbyists for commissioners and heads of cabinets. So this is one move. But what we've
only for the commissioners and the heads of cabinets. I mean, all the collaborators can still
exactly that's the problem.
Meet them without it being registered anywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's one of the issues.
To end, let's move to a couple of names.
Mm-hmm.
You have a list of revolving door examples. The one that everybody here in Belgium will know is Karel De Gucht,
mm-hmm.
who was the EU Trade Commissioner and now is getting a new job, probably. Explain, what is he going to do?
He's going to be on the management board of Belgacom. So Belgacom, who owns Proximus and Skynet,
yeah.
And they've been lobbying a lot on TTIP before, and now he'll be on their board. And the telecoms sector has been the third biggest business group lobbying on TTIP. So he was negotiating the deal, and now he's going to be working for one of the biggest lobbies on TTIP.
Okay, has he been talking to people who are involved in the telecom sector before?
Yeah, he has been. There's been a lot of stakeholder consultations, especially with Skynet, and they've been talking between each other before. Yeah.
Let's see who else do we have. There's another Belgian on your list that I didn't know, Jean de Ruyt.
Yeah, he was a very high-level Belgian diplomat. He's been working in NATO. He was also the representative of Belgium for the European Union.
Okay, so. He was the Belgian representative for NATO and for the EU, so
yep.
A diplomat working on the background means,
yep.
Yeah. And so he's no longer working as a diplomat?
No, he now works for Covicton and Burling, which is a law firm. Because in terms of lobbying, you also have law firms that are actually kind of lobbyists for hire. You can hire a law firm and they can lobby mm-hmm. on your behalf. And now he's working for them. He's going to be in the strategic team. And this is, if you want to quote, the New York Times has actually reported on this. Because he himself said that there is a certain excitement of getting what you want through the European system. And I know exactly how to do it. That's his own words. And now he's working for a big law company and one that is lobbying on behalf of big corporations.
Yeah, so he literally said that thanks to his knowledge as a diplomat, he knows how to get deals done for the companies he's working for now.
Yeah.
Yeah. My colleague has a question.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask you about that, the law firms that lobby on behalf of. Does that mean that if you are an unregistered lobbyist and would not be able to get in contact with a commissioner or whatever, that you could have someone do it for you by using a registered law firm?
Yeah, of course. But it's not. It doesn't only apply to meetings. It can apply to laws. There's an example where a German plastic company, Paper Mito, actually paid a law firm to kill the ban on plastic bags. So the European Union was going to ban plastic bags, and you had a plastic company hiring a law firm, and the law firm on their website now actually advertise how they managed to kill the ban.
Uh-huh.
That's obscene.
Okay. In the meantime, so you mentioned we're gonna end almost here, but just one thing, the TTIP, so the trade agreement negotiations, you mentioned that clause that would allow companies to have a separate form of legislation and to attack laws of individual states. It's called the ISDS, Investor-State Dispute Settlement Clause. Has it been removed now or not? Because it's been it's a bit unclear. There was a vote a couple of weeks ago to the European Parliament where one source says that it's been removed, the other source says it hasn't been removed.
So the background is there was a public consultation, and you had more than 150,000 people that answered the consultation, and 97% of the people who answered said no. So the commission had what they called a reformed ISDS. So they say that in the long term, rather than have private courts, in the long term you will have public courts, and the arbitrators will be judged. Because at the moment in those private courts, the judges are not actually officially judges. They can just be lawyers that become judges. So that's the reform, that in the long term it will become public, and that the judges will have to be judged.
So it's the principle stays, but it's just the setup, and the judges are resourced differently.
Exactly,
Differently, yeah. Okay, good. Thank you. Have I forgotten anything otherwise?